Welcome everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network. You can find other great, incredible Big 12 content over at 1012 Podcast Network. We're also a member of the Sports Social Network, which gets you access to a lot of cool English soccer or English sports as well. So if you're looking for rugby and soccer and football coverage, check them out as well. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's been waiting the entire summer for this show, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Special teams are special, man. Special teams that want to be special prioritize the special teams. There's probably a better way to coach say that. But yes, we are talking special teams, Gerald. Like a winning program, we don't phone in any of the three phases of the game. I love my special teams. I do. I won't deny that.
It's a third phase of the game, right? The unsung heroes or the unsung villains, depending on if you're watching an Iowa State game, of the team come on special teams, right? The third phase. Texas, in recent memory, has a punter that was a bowl MVP because special teams are so important. So we'll preview the special teams for you today, and then we'll Burn Orange Lens has got a lot of non-campus Longhorns to talk about. We'll close the show out with a little Godzillatron for your viewing and listening, really. Pleasure. So the special teams last year were relatively special, mildly to moderately special in spots. The kicking game was solid. The punting game left something to be desired, and Texas went out and got what it desired. And the returners were good, not great, but we'll talk about that as well. But, you know, Jeff Banks gets a lot of his shine for, you know, recruiting and the tight ends, but, like, he's an elite special teams coach, and I think this group has an opportunity to be an asset for Texas this year. Burt Auburn had a really solid first year, kicked a game-time kick against Tech to send it to overtime. Had the go-ahead kick from Bama. They gave Bryce Young too much time. All-conference guy, you know, really, really accurate from that medium long range, right? Texas needed some help on the punting scene, and so they went out and got one of the top grad transfers on the market with Ryan Sanborn coming over from Stanford. The guy's going to walk away with a Stanford and Texas degree, so like that dude, if he doesn't make it to the league as a punter, has an opportunity to make a lot of money in the business sector as well. Well, Will Stone handled the kickoffs last year. Again, good. Had 26-ish touchbacks, which touchbacks are weird in college because what's considered a touchback now based upon the fair catch rules and all of that. And then the units that I think we will spend the most time on, like the punt blocking and the punt returning units last year, I think were probably shockingly good. And I think that's where Jeff Banks made a ton of money. So that's like the 30,000 foot view of it, Kyle. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this feels like to me a year where the special teams and Jeff Banks' group is really going to make its money as a differentiator for Texas.
Agreed. Ryan Sanborn's degree is in management science and engineering. So, yes, he's going to be a lot of people's boss one day soon. But, no, starting back at the top, right, you started with Burt Auburn. I think he had a very solid first year. He was a, you know, I'm going to use the kicker ratings here, a five-star in the kicker world. They'll never make a kicker an actual five-star unless he can routinely hit, like, 65-yarders in high school. But, you know, if you look at the Coles kicker ratings and the other who specifically rate only kickers, right, then they can use all five stars. He was a five-star kicker, one of the top in his class. But there was a fear last year coming into the season, if you remember this, replacing Cameron Dicker, who had to take over punting, kicking, kickoff, did it all and did it all really well at an elite level and then went on to be great in the NFL. There was a lot of worry about the newness, right? You knew that Jeff Banks is a lot of reputation for, you know, developing some good tight ends, sure, being a money recruiter, okay. I don't think he gets his due, obviously being a punchline to some jokes for some off-field incidents, but I think he doesn't necessarily get his shine for the, and Sark tried to give it to him this offseason. He's multiple times praised just how detailed Banks is with the special teams. Like, how it's not just go out and run fast and make tackles. Like, every aspect of special teams under Banks has a very, very detailed plan to it. They have a, you know, a goal of how they want to do things. This year, they're focusing a little bit more on the return game versus the just punt block. The punt return game as well as the kick return game. Sark wants more, you know, positive field position starts there. I think, you know, this unit was really, really, really good, right? Like, they were number 11 nationally in FEI special teams rankings. There were some things that they did phenomenally. They blocked four kicks, the 10th most in the nation, including three punts, the seventh best. I think there was at least one of those that they got a roughing the kicker, which was erroneous. So all those numbers should be even better. But Banks, you know, is going to keep this unit at least at that level, if not improve it. They have some things they have to replace, but way, way less than last year, right? So start with Auburn. We know he can hit kicks from 40 to 49. He's really good from that range. 7 of 9. He's never attempted a 50-yarder. So if you want a weakness here, we don't know. He could have that leg in him. He had a clutch 49-yarder, which makes me think maybe he could hit a 50-yarder 1 yard further. But, you know, it is something different, right, when you talk about that NFL-level leg. But he's consistent. His streak of successful extra points is 58, the sixth longest such streak in UT history. The other thing to think about is they're replacing Hudson Card, who we know he went to Purdue to be quarterback, but he was also the holder on this team all year last year when he was healthy. So there were some issues in the beginning with the snapper. Zach Edwards was taken over by, you know, Lance St. Louis. Sark said about St. Louis, he might be one of the most improved guys on the roster. Having been a true freshman last year, the weight room was good for him. Basically, he was the number one long snapper, but long snappers aren't big guys typically in high school. So as a true freshman to have to play, you know, at maybe 215, 210, soaking wet, maybe, like, he may have been 200 even, it's a lot. So the bulking up for him is good. We already knew he could be a good snapper. So if they, I would say out of his five misses, right, a couple of them were snap and hold issues. So they get the hold right, and St. Louis takes a step up, right? I think we know what Bert Auburn can be from inside, you know, exorbitant leg. We don't know about who the holder is. We don't know about him plus 50, but I'm more comfortable than when it was Dicker leaving and we just said, I don't know. It'll be someone. It'll be Stone or Auburn. Someone will step up. At least now we know what we're starting with.
Kyle, Lance Saint-Louis, as I'm going to call him, currently is weighing at 219. So last year he was very, very lacking. Yeah, I think the holder is going to be a question. I mean, usually, right, it goes to either the punter or the backup quarterbacks. Like, is it Ryan Sanborn or is it going to be, you know, Malik Murphy kind of situation? Having the backup quarterback do it's always iffy, right? Because if they get hurt, you know, that's a thing, right? Like, your backup gets hurt holding on kicks, and then your quarterback gets hurt, you know, in the routine game play. You're down to QB3, which Texas has a little bit of cushion there based on the current situation. Maybe you have Archhold. I don't know. Maybe it'll be. You're not going to burn.
Humble him a bit.
Not going to burn his red shirt holding punts or holding kicks. Probably even though Arch is not going to be here for 4 years. That's another conversation for another day. Sanborn is a guy who comes in. You know, Trejo was the stopgap last year, but he's out of eligibility. Right? He was. You know, he had some really pivotal punts. I was watching the Alabama game, and he absolutely, like, the Bryce Young play that we all talk about was set up because Trejo absolutely booted the crap out of that thing. You know, definitely did not have all the physical tools, but did everything that he did, everything that he could do. And so now you've got a guy, Sanborn, who's, you know, a top 10 in the country kind of guy. You know, hopefully, and the hope is that Texas doesn't need to utilize him as much, but being able to look at your punter as an asset for your defense, right? When you think about punting, right, it's your first defensive play. And so if you can, a defense that, you know, we still have some questions. I think the defense could be really good, but if you put, you know, people on minus side of the field, you know, he's not going to boot. He's not the booter, but he's the guy that can put it where you want it and get your coverage team in position to limit the damage that a returner can do. And so that puts your defense in plus position. Giving a team short fields routinely is a way to lose football games. And so a guy that can, you know, boot a couple that are, you know, 45-ish yards, you know, 42-ish yards, that'll flip the field and put your defense in solid position when your offense does struggle. Hopefully that's not the situation often, but Texas should have an asset for themselves.
Sanborn, you mentioned it. He was Pro Football Focus's number 8 punter in 2022. And he's not the Mike Dixon type of punter, right? He's not the guy who just boots 65 yarders. Again, similar to Auburn, except we've seen it for 4 years. We know what he can do, right? He is, you know, pretty much the same average around 42 yards that Trejo was, except the difference is Trejo, again, love that guy. Love just his like competitiveness coming from Texas Wesleyan. I'm sure he never thought he'd actually see the field, much less have to, you know, do critical things in an Alabama game. But he just came in and did what was needed. But he was in the bottom quartile of FBS punters in both hang time and placement. What Ryan Sanborn does is place the ball as good as any college kicker in the country in the past 20 years. Like he, what he lacks in absolute boom, he makes up for just in putting it exactly where he wants it. He was the only punter in FBS with 20 attempts to pin the opponent inside the 20 who nailed it every time, right? No punts for touchback in 2022. He knows how to what was the coffin corner, you know, Madden drill. Like, dude is phenomenal at it, right? And that's what you're talking about. It's starting position. It's that extra weapon for your defense, right? It's you know, let them take one weapon away from the offense. Have another, you know, limiting factor. The sideline is an extra defender always, but now you have, you know, the back of the end zone and the short snaps and the you know, can't have long developing plays taken out of an offense's repertoire. So it really is a phenomenal weapon, right? To me, the other thing, right, all two-time all Pac-12 honorable mention, phenomenal. Two-time captain at Stanford, like, I like that a lot. I like that you're bringing a seasoned guy who's a leader, who you know is dependable, who does things really, really well there. And then you go to the kickoff where they said Sanborn, I believe Sark mentioned Sanborn could also do kickoffs, but it will be Will Stone. And Banks mentioned Stone as the guy who's improved the most of anyone on special teams. So, the thing that I think with Will Stone, if you look at 26 touchbacks against 86 kicks, it's good. It's very good, but it's, you know, there may have been someone who's better than that. But the thing that Texas did with him really well, and the reason that that unit was so good, is they knew that when there was times to have hang time on it, and to, you know, if you weren't deathly afraid of, and there were some really good Big 12 returners where you just want to boot it out of the end zone, you could really do the same thing you're talking about with punts. If you get enough hang time on it and they have to come it out, you can get them inside their own 20 because Texas had the athletes and they covered it well, and they again used direction. Like, that was a strength of Banks's and a strength of Stone's, and to hear that he's improved, I'm really excited. I don't know that it means he'll just instantly have more touchbacks. Like, if he's getting more hang time and they're able to get more guys, again, inside their own 20 because we have good coverage and they're starting with a 17-yard return, right? Like, I'm really excited for what that looks like. So if that unit can even possibly improve, that's huge for what should be a top 10 unit this year.
Yeah, I think, like we said, I think the special teams unit is going to be an asset. I think the thing that I am very curious about is, I was rewatching the last season and I forgot that, like, the first punt of the season was a block, right? Like, Keelan Robinson got the perfect jump on it and absolutely crushed it and went for a score. Like, that was a huge thing for Texas. And I think, you know, Keelan Robinson maybe gets a little too eager in some of those situations and jumps the gun, or maybe officials are not necessarily used to somebody who can jump a snap like that. But, you know, they were a solid punt return defense group. They were a solid, you know, punt group last year. You know, you've got Keelan Robinson, Xavier Worthy that are looking at returning punts and kicks, and, you know, Jonte Cook, DeAndre Moore are on that as well. So, like, I just have a feeling that there's going to be a game this year where I think back to, like, the Red River game where it was really nothing was going for Texas, and then Jordan Shipley returned that kick for a touchdown and sparked an entire comeback from that group, right? So, like, I think there's going to be something like that happen. It may not be a return. It may be, you know, Keelan Robinson blocking a punt at the right time. They call for the block and he gets there, and Texas, you know, puts itself in position to score, so just scores outright on the punt blocker. You know, maybe Trey Wisner, a guy who doesn't necessarily, this is, Trey Weiser's in such a weird spot because there's the both the wide receiver room and the running back room are very, very crowded. And he's, you know, with all world talent, and Trey Weisner's your lunch pail kind of guy. And I use that. He's just going to come to work and work his tail off. And, you know, he was mentioned specifically as somebody who can and should play a big part of the special teams unit. So I wonder if a guy like that who needs a position and needs a spot can make themselves a little bit of a career and find a spot on special teams.
Yeah, I mean, Keaton Crawford, Maurice Blackwell, these guys endeared themselves to the coaches, to the fans with their tenacious play on special teams before they saw the field on the defensive side of the ball, right? Banks described Keelan Robinson as a blue-collar guy, and you don't always think of a running back necessarily as blue-collar. You don't always think of a running back who's undersized and fast as a blue-collar guy. You don't think of probably your fastest guy on the team. I heard they clocked him at over 23 miles an hour as a blue-collar guy, but it's exactly what he is, right? He's willing to dive at a punter's feet and try to take the ball. He also was second on the team in special teams tackles last year with 4 solo tackles. I mean, he's a guy who's willing to just make all the plays, ultimate team guy, and he knows, you know, I think I saw the stat, there was 13 players his size last year in the NFL who touched the football. Like, that just is what it is. He's probably not, you know, unless he just the perfect Kenny Gainwell situation opens up for him, he's probably not going to have a career at the NFL being a running back or a scat back or a pass catcher. Maybe he does. But he absolutely could be a Pro Bowler as a special teamer with the type of athletic skill that he has and the determination he has and the skill that Banks is coaching him up at, right? The blocking multiple punts. He picked up a blocked punt and returned it for a touchdown last year. You know, just being around the ball on all the special teams. Banks also said, like, you won't see it in the scorecards, but his ability to you know, get returners off their ability to go vertical and turn it back into another guy is the best he's ever seen, right? So being the first guy down there and in erasing what a kick return team wants to do, that may not show up in the stat sheet, but, you know, is an incredible asset. So Keelan Robinson, he was a honorable mention as a returner, which he was also, by the way, very good, third in the conference in both yards and kick return yards and kick return average, had a 52 yarder last year. But he should have been, you know, in any other conference, the special teams player of the year for all of the other things he did. However, it just happened that TCU returner Darius Davis was the Jet Award, the best returner in the nation. He was it. And then Malik Knowles and Phillip Brooks were also, you know, All-American caliber the past 2 years as returners. The Big 12 has a lot of special team stars in its makeup, or Keelan Robinson would get even more appreciation, I think, there. But just a phenomenal player. But they do, we know Texas also, not just young guys, they do use those, but they use stars. They really prioritize this unit. And so DeMarvian Overshown was a special teams phenom, right? We know what he could do physically. But him and Roshan, who I don't think people understood that Roshan also was lighting people up, had the hit stick ability in him, they're both gone. So we talked about replacing a holder. That's one thing. We talked about, you know, second year now of a long snapper. Now we're talking about the tacklers on these units. And Sark said, he thinks coverage-wise, they have the two best gunners in the country, and Keaton Crawford and Keelan Robinson, phenomenal in the punt game and coverage units. So I love to hear that, but they still have to replace DeMarvian Overshown, Roshan, a couple guys there who really made an impact on the special team. So who's going to be the step-up guys? I think Trey Weisner is a great candidate for that, to make himself a little bit known. I watch the special teams. I love the special teams. So these are names that I'm very familiar with. Hopefully, if you really, you know, do something big in a big game, everyone will know your name as a freshman, right? It's an easy way to get ahead of the curve there.
So I think, again, like we've said it before, we said it again, this should be a really good special teams unit. I think Texas has the opportunity to really set themselves up. And I think, and, you know, like I said, I've already said, I think there's going to be a pivotal special teams play this year that swings things for Texas. And, you know, the old adage, good teams find ways to win. And I think sometimes the ways that they find are on special teams. And so I'm excited to see what that looks like, what that turns out to be this year.
All right, Gerald, now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. It's award season for both football and football. We'll start there. 3 named to the 56-person watch list for Mack Herman Trophy, which Mack Herman Trophy sounds like it could be for either football, but in this case, it's the The top soccer award, the three players there were Lexi Massimo, Trinity Byers, and MJ Cox, who we mentioned before is injured, but we're hoping can come back this year. Also in the top drawer, preseason 11, Byers was first team, Lexi was second team. And in the top drawer, top 75 players in the country, Trinity Byers was their number two, Lexi Massimo number 16, and Jilly Shimkin number 75. Nice accolades and plaudits for a team that expects big things this year and is still young.
This team has the opportunity to be special. There's a lot of talent. I think there's some still things that they need to work out, especially with MJ Cox unavailable for a spell. But they have the opportunity to do something really cool this year, and I think do something that we haven't seen from Texas soccer yet.
Yeah, and I know BYU wants to make an impact on Big 12, you know, sports soon, like make an early impact. And I feel like their soccer team, maybe the sleeper. TCU has been UT's main rival along with West Virginia over the years, but it may be BYU who gives them a run as this Texas team looks to defend their Big 12 championship. Award season in football, that's two O's and a T. Xavier Worthy and Kelvin Banks name AP preseason All-Americans, both on the second team. No love for Jalen Ford, so interesting look there. Worthy and Ewers were both named to the Earl Campbell Texas Rose watch list.
Banks and Worthy getting that makes a ton of sense. The Texas Rose watch list, you honestly expect to see more Texas players on there, but I think the two that made it definitely makes sense. Jalen Ford and John A. Barron continue to be very disrespected, and I hope they take it out on the field.
I hope they take it incredibly personally. Guys who've been taking it out on the field and leaving it all out on the field, we have some NFL Longhorns. I think the whole entire world, especially the entire world who looks at it through burnt orange lenses, watched Bijan's opening drive, like it was the Zapruder film, watched 30 different angles of all of his touches. He had five. He only played one drive, but in his five touches and one drive, he had four missed tackles, including his electric first touch. He had a one-hander. Just Bijan is that guy.
What more can you say about it, right? There was the one-handed catch out of the backfield, forced four missed tackles on five touches, like just did Bijan things, right? And they didn't give him a ton of work to do because you got to keep him healthy for the regular season. There's talk, if you're a fantasy football person, like he has the opportunity to be like one of the top five-ish, 10-ish running backs in the league from a fantasy football standpoint, but also from just like a regular football standpoint. So really, really impressive.
Excited for him. In that game, Bijan's one drive ended in no points because Joseph Osai had an interception in the red zone for that Bengals defense. So if Bijan didn't get the touchdown, the only other plausible outcome was Osai to get the interception. So and it wasn't intended for Bijan. He ran the other way. Roshan, the other running back, has been taking RB1 reps for the Bears and looked very impressive yet again. Now, they have a crowded backfield, no like elite home run lock players, but they have some established guys. And Roshan just continues to do all the things. He was called out for his vision, his finishing runs, and his pass blocking, which again, you don't expect rookies to be as good as he is on that. I think he's already their best pass blocker, which really, you know, gives him a leg up. People don't necessarily understand how important that is for a running back. He has already passed one Longhorn on the depth chart. He just looks like, you know, he's showing people even at the next level, he absolutely will get five extra, or, you know, three to five extra yards after contact every run, which is crazy. I didn't expect it to transition so well so quickly for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got all, I mean, we knew he was going to be a locker room guy. We knew he was going to be a guy who people like to play for or play with. And I think he's showing that, he is going to be a guy that can carry some water for you. And I'm excited to see it. I think of all the people that deserve it, I think he deserves it the most.
Yeah. 43 yards, total yards in game two. He had a nice screen that went for about 15 of those. Definitely passed down to Foreman on the depth chart. Hate the Longhorn on Longhorn violence, but a couple others I'll go quickly through. Sam Ehlinger, entered the game down 10, led two scoring drives, in 4 minutes. and ultimately the come from behind win had a nice scramble for a touchdown that probably reminded of the Tom Herman glory years. The other quarterback from those times, Shane Buechele, through 2 weeks of preseason play, has been solid. He's 21 for 28 for 260 yards, two touchdowns, and an interception. They signed Blaine Gabbert in the offseason to back up Patrick Mahomes. Gabbert is pretty solid as well, 11 for 16, 179, three TDs, but no picks. Buechele could very likely win that battle and be the backup. And we saw in the Chad Henne days, you know, Mahomes, one hit, something with that ankle, something with that leg, you know, it's Buechele time. So see how that goes. The news that was not as exciting and downright was pretty upsetting this week out of the preseason was both Moro Ojomo and DeMarvion Overshown out with injuries. That Overshown walked off the field, so we thought his might be less. Moro Ojomo's scary, had to be carted off. It actually turns out that Ojomo's was a concussion, which is a little bit more quick to recover from than DeMarvion Overshown missing the entire year with an ACL tear. Just heartbreaking for that kid.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy who was probably going to play quite a bit for Dallas this year. And so, you know, living the dream and that happens absolutely sucks. So not necessarily ACLs are not the life sentence they used to be. So I think he'll be back next year and able to play, but it sucks. And the Moro Ojomo, I think they officially ruled out a concussion, but I think it was still head injuries are scary and having to be carted off. You know, you kind of hold your breath until you hear more about it. So sucks for both those guys, man.
Yeah, I was watching a couple compilation tapes from, you know, his first and second games where Ojomo is just absolutely, you know, swimming through the blockers, the linemen, the muck that was thrown at him and making plays, solo tackles, gang tackles, forcing runners back, like just looking like a seasoned vet, a guy who, you know, Eagles fans were excited to figure out, we got to keep this guy. I hope the injury doesn't change or derail that calculus because, you know, he looks like another in a long line of Texas interior linemen makes general manager look smart for the late round pick for the really good Eagles defense. One guy who's no longer with the Longhorn program, should be probably in the NFL at his age, but is currently still in the college ranks. Casey Thompson was named the starter this week for Tom Herman at Florida Atlantic. Gerald, what do you think about that one?
Finally, I mean, Casey Thompson is a guy who, you know, doesn't probably have an NFL future, so, you know, finish it out. You know, Texas to Nebraska to FAU is an interesting trajectory. I'll just say it like that. But, you know, he and Tom Herman have the potential to be giant killers. They've got, they won't, but, like, see if they could knock off, like, Clemson or Illinois is actually more doable. But, like, they could win a big game together this year.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the analogy, but Austin to Omaha to Boca Raton doesn't really make sense, you know, for a snowbird. Maybe if it was reversed, someone born in Omaha goes to Austin for work and then goes down to Boca Raton for retirement. I don't know who else is making the Austin to Omaha to Boca Raton pipeline. That's I can't. If you have it, tweet it at us. Who's the not even a long haul trucker? That route doesn't even make sense. So we'll keep it moving here. Good news, not in at all unexpected news, but just the right news. Chris Del Conte expected to be extended for a 7-year extension because the Board of Regents ultimately will have to approve that, but the university is recommending a 7-year extension for Del Conte, who's just done a little bit like win 58 national championships, or excuse me, conference championships since he stepped up. I think they've won double-digit national championships since he's been around, but just his done all the things he said in revitalizing a program, changing the game day experience, rebuilding facilities across the board, getting engagement up, getting fundraising up, bringing the standard up. You know, I firmly think he's the best athletic director in the country, so keep him here forever.
I was told that he was trying to find the first train out west, so good to see that this is in the works. Again, maybe this is just a power play for him to get out to California. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I take my my news from people with message boards and mullets, so someone who owns both of those things, with a grain of salt. The weirdest news of the week, Tim Tebow popped by the Texas locker room for whatever reason. I guess he was doing his research on Texas for the upcoming games, but because he's Tim Tebow, he's like, I just got to get a lift in. Pops into the UT locker room. Looks like he could still play either baseball or football. Casually squat 405. No belt, no spotters, just threw down 405. I will say I was impressed.
I mean, Tim Tebow still very much is in the football physique, even though he, you know, didn't necessarily pan out at the pro level, but guy takes care of himself. It's really impressive. Always been kind of a dude.
Physically, not necessarily mentally, but yeah, the track world championships were this past week, and Texas had some important showings, right? I think the most important of these is where we need to start. Ryan Crouser wins the shot put world championship, setting the meet record with a 23.51. It's just off his all-time record throw of 23.57. It's his personal second best, and also therefore the second best throw that's ever been thrown in the history of shot put. He's literally reinventing the sport. And oh, by the way, the most impressive part of that, more so than being the first person to win two Olympic medals as well as two world championships, no shot putter's ever done that with that kind of longevity before. And he's already looking forward to a third gold at next year's Olympics. But more impressively, he battled two blood clots in his leg. He hadn't been able to fully train for 3 weeks leading up to this. Doctors weren't even sure if he should be competing. The guy is just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about him as a potential Mount Rushmore guy, and I think he's continued to cement himself there. Tara Davis, silver in the long jump, best ever finish in that event for a Longhorn. The sprinters did not do as much as we hoped they would. You know, the 100-meter, Sha'Carri Richardson did her thing, and that was a very, very hotly contested 100. I think it's probably one of the better 100s we've seen in a long time, and I think the women 100 is going to be more entertaining come the Olympics than the men's, because those Jamaican sprinters are going to want it back. It's exciting to watch. And then Rasita finished fifth in the 200, which is a great finish for her, but seeing Julian lose for the first time this year was weird.
It was weird, right? And fifth is nothing to shake a stick at it for a 22-year-old, right? Like you're entering professional track, but we just now aren't used to her losing. I think both of them have a lot of medals in their future. Don't rule Alfred or Adeleke out. Janae Jefferson, someone we've never ruled out, just went pro in her sport and did the dang thing, right? There was the Kat Osterman League for Athletes Unlimited, but there is actually a new women's fast pitch league. It's a national league. There is a team in Austin called the Texas Smoke, and Jefferson just smoked the competition. She won the league MVP. Her team won the organization's first ever championship over Florida-based USSS. S-A Pride. That's U-S-S-A Pride. Gerald obviously knows that stands for the United States Select Sports Association, something like that. She was named the MVP after dominating all year, and then was also, for good measure, named the playoff MVP because she just went and did her thing all season. Janae Jefferson, the GOAT.
Finally got the much-deserved championship while playing in Austin, just not necessarily the right colors or uniform.
And then getting to the end here, FedEx golf kind of postseason is coming up, the FedEx Cup this week. And we knew Scheffler was in. It was a matter of where he would finish one, two, or three heading into the Cup. And that matters a lot in the FedEx standings, because where you finish in the regular season, basically you get a staggered start. So he, as the number one kind of seed, will get a 10-under start. Now, on the opposite end of that spectrum is Jordan Spieth, who starts at even. Doesn't mean he can't win, but was 29th out of 30 in the FedEx Cup. Both of them kind of had to go right to the end to figure out where their seed would be. A missed putt ensured Scheffler would be number one, and Spieth finishing out just right, and a couple people dropping in the latter half of the day saw him squeeze in. He went moved from 31, which would have been the first one out, to 29. Scheffler, just, you know, he was incredible at the 66 on the final day of the BMW Championship, and fell to a guy who shot the course record of 61. So no fault of his own. But the interesting stat on Scotty: there are 31 golfers who have gained 50 or more strokes from tee to green, basically, in 2023. Only three have gained 100 strokes that way, right? These are elite ball strikers. Scotty Scheffler is the only one who's gained more than 125, and in fact, he's actually gained 214. Like, all that is to say that Scotty Scheffler is striking the ball at Tiger Woods, like, prime of his career levels. If Scotty even was a somewhat decent putter, we would be talking about a guy who wins three majors at minimum a year. Like, he's so close. He's already number one, but he's so close to just really stepping up and being that dominant. The way he's playing, his kind of his approach, his ball striking is just unbelievable right now. And we'll close it out. Elliot Spaziri on the tennis side gained a singles qualification for the U.S. Open, or excuse me, a qualifying wild card for the U.S. Open, which will be this week, one of nine to receive wild card spots. If he makes it through that, he will get to compete in the big U.S. Open at the beginning of next month.
Glad to see him. I mean, he kind of jumped out of school early to do this. I think getting his qualifying for the U.S. Open is big, and I think this should be hopefully a springboard for him in his professional career.
All right, Gerald, let's springboard to the end of this show. A little bit of Godzillatron. What have you been watching on your giant screen?
Not a big streaming week for me. I think I go in ebbs and flows. Been a weird work week, but my wife and I got caught up on the season of What We Do in the Shadows, and that show just continues to get better and better. I love it. I think it's hilarious. It's kind of an uncomfortable watch in a lot of spots, and that's kind of the point. Some of the comedy comes from that. These people are out of touch with what normal people, I say people, they're vampires. They're vampires from, centuries ago, so they're out of touch with what and how people live. It's very funny. And then I just started a new book called The Ninth House, and the only way I can describe it is, like, if the Ivy League, like, secret societies were all, like, into the occult, is the only way I can describe it. So very, very interesting. I'm only, like, two chapters in. I'm a very, like, painfully slow reader. It's the ADHD, but I'm enjoying it so far. It's not a, like, relaxing, settle you down read. It's very creepy, very kind of atmospheric, but interesting premise. And I'll give anything with an interesting premise a try. Very, very enjoyable thus far.
Say that Ninth House tagline again. It's as if what?
The Ivy League, like, secret societies, like Skull and Bones and all that, were all, like, into the occult, and, like, that stuff was real.
Okay, and you're under the premise that they aren't, and it's not. Okay,
that's fair.
I haven't watched What We Do in the Shadows yet this new season. Need to catch up on that. What I did watch a lot of, especially this past weekend, we had my nieces and nephews, all three of them, at our house for the weekend. Give the parents a little break and get some QT with the little guys. And so I watched a good chunk of younger programming. Watch a little Bluey in there, all the good stuff. Was happy to see that they picked Moana as well, which I love Moana. That movie holds up. The songs hold up. The story is still great. Everything's perfect. I mean, it's a 10 out of 10, doesn't miss. Kids or adults movie. We also, at my wife's recommendation, found out they hadn't seen a Goofy movie, which we were able to watch. And gosh, that is just so good. I mean, there are some loopholes. Some of the physics when they go over the waterfall don't always make sense. The world's biggest pop star just, inviting someone on stage and security not immediately sweeping them off. There's some things there. But Powerline, we know he's a real one. We know that because his music is far too good for what it needed to be for that film. Absolutely crushes it. Also, I heard Goofy talk a couple times and thought if they ever do remake it, it should be Dave Chappelle. Like, he just, without the yuck, the rest of it, when he just talks, sounds a bit like Dave Chappelle not trying to be Goofy. And then Bobby Moynihan should be the friend. Was it PJ or whatever? It holds up. It has aged well, also because the fashion is all back in style right now. It's what the kids are wearing again, so it makes sense. And then the final thing I watched, not with the kids, was Quarterback, the Netflix QB show following Kirk Cousins, Patrick Mahomes, and Oregon Heisman quarterback. And Marcus Mariota. Thank you. It's interesting. Mariota was, like, my wife really, enjoyed kind of the, she's got a soft spot for all poly, Polynesian kids. And so kind of loved he and his wife and their sweet relationship. But it was kind of weird that, he lost the starting spot. And then he went and got an elective procedure and just left the team. But, it is what it is. But it was an interesting kind of watch for him as his battle to be a starter again didn't really pan out, and that was tough. The other two guys, you know, followed Patrick Mahomes, who you saw him gutted out through a Super Bowl. I don't know if it made Mahomes any more likable. It certainly made his wife even less likable. Gosh, she's hard to watch, but I would still recommend it, mainly because I went in thinking Kirk Cousins was just the corniest human being alive, and I had no time of day for him. And I left that documentary, like, rooting for the guy. Like, he's pretty great. Like, he's the guy who, like, you know, throws for or has, like, the NFL's largest comeback in history. You know, ribs are hurting. He's limping, but he comes home and, like, first thing he does is, like, take the trash, you know, out to the garbage can. Like, just he still is like a Midwestern aw shucks meathead, like, dad who's just a good guy. Like, it doesn't seem to be any kind of shtick. He's just seems like a good human being. So if only to redefine your opinion of Kirk Cousins, you should watch Netflix's Quarterback. It's definitely an interesting look at the 2022 season before we kick off 2023.
Hearing goofy movie discussion on this podcast is absolutely what you're here for. I'm a goofy movie stan. I have been since the 90s. It is low-key probably my favorite Disney movie. I watch it with my sons regularly. It's a very father-son thing. The movie's all about father-son relationships. I cry at least once a month in our routine watching of that movie, and it's ridiculous that Tevin Campbell heard the words direct-to-video Goof Troop sequel, and he decided to drop those bars. Like, I've argued and will go to bat that those are two of the best Disney songs in the 90s, and both of them are absolute bangers to this day, Eye to Eye, and Stand Out are both just absolute monster songs. That's what we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on the socials media at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with our Alabama and Rice previews. We'll also give you our season preview and our Podstradamus picks. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Let's go, Scotty.